All right. So who's up for a little chat and giggle? Are you guys...
Yeah, should we do like another singing one where we like sing like our names in the harmony or something?
Oh, you mean for an opening of the show?
For your opening?
Right now. Ready? I'll Will, you hold a note and I'll build it and Jason will top it.
I don't even know what a note...
Just do it with your name.
Will...
Jason...
Smartless.
Welcome to Smartless. What's wrong with that?
Oh, God.
That was perfect. We were a little late today, but I got a luncheon, so that was great while we waited.
Oh, Buttons, you got it fed. So
I'm walking down the street around like Broadway and 70th, and I'm not making this up. This girl is 20-something, I'm guessing. She has a jacket that's open, and she has like a lace tube top, and her boob's completely out.
Mm. Just the one?
Just the one boob. And I'm like, is everybody seeing this? And everybody like was looking at her, and she was just walking around real confident with just one boob hanging out. Huh. I thought that was it took my eyes a minute to believe it, you know.
And I once saw a guy confidently hanging a shit on Sixth Avenue at noon on a Wednesday.
No, no, it wasn't. I was with you. It was Eighth Avenue, and I'll tell you this is how it went down. I was walking with Jason, and he goes, "Look at that." And then we see a dude, and you see it actually coming out. And I said, thanks for making me look, because now I'll never not be able to see that.
It was a high-pressured garden hose style one.
Again, and, it doesn't.
And he didn't even bend his knees. It's just, I mean, this is noon on a weekday. Sidewalk. He didn't try to go to the corner or down an alley or anything.
So Jay, you'll like this. So the other day.
Oh my God.
The other day I'm here in Atlanta and I'm at the Publix here in Atlanta, just buying a few items at the grocery store. Hey, stars are just like us, you know? And so I'm pushing the cart and I'm here with my buddy Eli, as you know.
Oh, and, fuck yeah.
Eli, who got recognized at the gym the other day, a guy says to him, because he's wearing a Smartless sweatshirt, and the guy goes, "We love Smartless. Where'd you get that?" And he's like, "Yeah, I got it." And he's like, "Yeah, you know." And they said, "My name's Eli." And the guy goes, "Are you Eli from the?" And he was ecstatic.
Yeah,
he was
really?
Ecstatic.
Are you kidding?
No, I swear to God.
That's crazy.
Yeah. So he's friends with this guy at the gym. Anyway, that's a different story.
Wait a second. They swap numbers. They're in Publix. They swap numbers because...
He goes to the gym. I work out here at home in my own thing. And he goes to the gym and he comes back and he's like, "Yeah, I ran into Gordo again, my buddy there. He was wearing the hockey." I go, "How'd you start talking to him?" Mm-hmm. He says, "Well, he was wearing the shirt that said such and such hockey." And he goes, "So then it was just on." And I go, "Yeah."
Hey, Canadians are just fantastic.
He's so sweet and he's so nice. Anyway, Eli's very engaging. Eli, and people love him. You go everywhere you go. People are like, "Hey, Eli."
Yeah.
So anyway, we're going along the aisle. And we stop, and he stops, and he picks up some the men's wipes, and it's a 3-pack. And he goes, "Oh, it's a 3-pack. They're not on their own." I go, "What are you doing?" He goes, "I'm getting the wipes." And I go, "What?" And he goes, "Yeah." I go, so he puts them in the cart. At which point, I push the cart away from me, hands off. And I say,
"Yeah,
I'm out of this."
Yeah, right.
That's it. Yeah, you don't have to be caught getting
that. I can't be. No. Associated with the wipes.
Did get a text from our friend JT, Justin Thoreau, last night.
Oh.
And I have to share what he said, and I'm sure I'll be so happy I'm sharing this. He said, we're chatting, let's get together, we're going to have dinner, blah, blah, blah. And he goes, "By the way, I saw a picture of Bateman and Arnett yesterday. Are they skipping body day, like every day?"
That son of a bitch.
Wow.
Well, you know, listen, when you're walking around with 2% body fat and freezing in the middle of summer as a result, I don't want to hear it from him. You know, talk about somebody who's malnourished, Will.
Yeah, it's true.
Why don't you take a run at him, you know?
I'd like to. Don't worry. I do, as you know, from his insane text when he's tries to be poetic, you know, and he gets like real in our other thread that we have. Mm-hmm. God, we're in too many threads now, aren't we?
Yeah, we are.
Jason just got pumped back into the Octortle Quartle Wordle.
I know. I just saw that Affleck is now in it.
I'm not happy about it.
Well, no, that got put out there that I guess that Ben, as we know, we had him on here, but he's not part of it, and he claimed that he was just in a Wordle thread with you. And anyway, remember, Sam was all aghast.
Yeah, I'm not happy about it. I didn't ask Matt to do that. He just thought it would be a fun goof if he just put me back on there. And then sure enough, first thing the next morning, it's not even 7:30 in the morning, and I'm in Austin. So that's 5:30 in the morning for me. And these freaks who are on East Time are already done with their an hour of crossword type wordplay. And they say, Bateman, you're up. I'm like, I haven't even evacuated myself yet. Like,
which I brought up, which I did bring
which
up.
Which you did, yeah. And I like to do my thing with this Wordle stuff when I was on, deep in the afternoon, right?
Sure. I do it before I go to bed.
But these guys like to know who won and who lost before breakfast.
And talk about it.
Right.
Bradley and I were up early already going like, wow, that was a tough Octortle. I know, the fourth guess.
Yeah. And I wake up, I look at my text thing, and I've got 19 texts already. I'm like, ooh, something exciting is happening in my life. And no, it's just a long Wordle thread.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right, listen, let's get to it. These
there's two.
We have two guests. All right. Now we've had two guests before. These two, they have worked together their entire career and somehow have managed a very happy and healthy family life as well. Huh. It's very, very inspiring. They produce together. They write together. Okay. They direct together. They've created some of the most successful film and TV projects together, as well as an enormous production company. And in fact, I don't think there is a more successful Hollywood couple behind the camera.
Wow.
They have directed 10 films together. What? Grossing in excess probably of about $5 billion.
What?
And they better continue to get along, not only for the health of the industry, but also for the fact they are stuck together for life. Will, Sean, they're not a couple. They're a couple of brothers. Guys, it's our friends, the Russo brothers.
Oh, so, get out of town.
Yeah. Anthony and Joe.
Look at this. Wow.
I was going to leave that on and make you guess.
Really cool.
It's a family reunion with us.
Are you fucking kidding me? What's up,
good
boys?
Good morning.
Nice to meet you guys.
It's been about 20 years. Good to meet you, too.
Nice to
it's
meet
been
you, Sean.
It's been 20 years since the pilot of Arrested Development, but you've worked with Will a few times since then.
That's right.
And we've bumped into each other a bunch since then. Uh-huh.
Bateman, you haven't aged a day, I
know, it's amazing, isn't it?
Well, I sleep in olive oil. Yeah. And I go down to Tijuana a couple times a month for experimental medical work.
Infuse some Paul Rudd blood into your body.
Paul Rudd blood.
Yeah.
Will, I didn't want to say anything. You don't look as good as...
No. I know. I get it. Listen, it makes a lot of sense. You know, I say the same thing about JV. He looks incredible. He has not aged. I look like my own father now.
Are you living in a tent in your home?
He's got tough lighting there in the whisper booth.
It is tough. I'm here in Atlanta and I'm in the basement and I've got this like portable booth that I bring with me so I can do all my records. And
and you guys have not met Sean before, is that right?
We have not.
No.
Although,
well, get a load.
If you remember during casting of Arrested Development, Anth, right, there was a conversation at one point about, could we get Sean off of Will and Grace?
Is that true?
Could we work in between his schedule?
What and I'm still waiting. I mean, I could probably still get out.
Probably could.
Well, guess what? Guess what? That son of a bitch has still never seen one goddamn episode.
I saw two.
Of
I saw two.
He saw
I
don't, two episodes.
Name them. What happened in those episodes?
One and two. Will was on the couch saying something funny. You
good
were being
guess.
Snarky, standing up.
Great
Will was,
guess.
The blocking was Will was sitting and you were standing.
Pretty much every episode.
I think I remember the one you're talking about. No, that was
that,
a good
that
one.
Happened.
That was a good one.
But I did know, you guys directed Up All Night, and I did Up All Night with Will and Maya.
That's right.
That's true.
And
that's
true. What about Todd Margaret?
Todd
there
Margaret.
Was that too, right?
Todd Margaret.
That's
with
right.
Sweet, sweet Davy Cross.
And Running Wild.
That's right.
And Running Wild.
And Running Wild.
Jesus.
Wow.
Yeah. We did a bunch
do you remember,
of stuff.
Will, on Running Wild, those conversations we had early on where we were trying to be really respectful of Arrested Development. And so you and me and Mitch and Anth, we all decided to make it not as good as Arrested Development. That was really important.
That was the bar.
That'll show them.
Well, the truth is this. The truth is it was a good concept and we had some good pieces and we kept getting the note on the script from people at the network saying, look, man, you can't just have this be another Arrested Development, like as if that was a big failure. They kept saying that to us, like, okay? And you can't just think that you guys are going to come in here and we're just going to have another Arrested Development. We're like, well, we're really proud of Arrested Development. I don't know why you guys are mad at it.
They didn't want us to move the cameras. I remember there's a lot of... Yeah. But it was with Lionsgate, if you remember, and I think we made that show for, like, 2 corned beef sandwiches, you know? Mm-hmm. Like that
was and then was there any discussion, once you got into the Marvel world, any discussion to go ahead and bring Will Arnett into that as well as sort of like some sort of a horrific flash forward?
Well, I think the quote was, we don't want another Arrested Development.
There are these characters called the Great Lakes Avengers, and there's a cheese man... really important to that group.
Wait, you didn't just come up with that. Is that something you got a half a pitch on?
And we do. We have a complete pitch. We do.
That's our go-to whenever anybody asks what's our fantasy Marvel project.
The Great Lakes Avengers. Yeah. Now, you guys are done with the Marvels, with the Marvel stuff, the group, the whole thing, or do you still flirt with them a little bit? You guys are off on doing your own thing.
Well, you did Endgame. It's got to be like, that's your Endgame.
That was the Endgame. That's right.
Right.
They're very good friends of ours. I mean, we talk to those guys all the time, but... we're focused.
They can't afford you anymore. They just can't afford
you. I remember, Joe and Anthony, I remember when you guys first, I forget which was the first, it was a Captain America was the first one, right?
That was, Captain America, Winter Soldier.
Winter Soldier.
I love that one.
And it would do huge. Joe, I remember texting you and saying, fucking congrats, man, huge. And then it just like, and then every time, and then I just stopped saying congrats because the numbers just, it kept getting even bigger. I was like, well, fuck it, he doesn't need to hear congrats anymore. It's the number one movie of all time. What am I doing?
But then the next one made even more, and then the Avengers stuff made even more. I mean, did you feel like a pressure? Like, how are we going to top or try to manage the expectations of Kevin, of the whole infrastructure over there? Was there that? Was there a worry that, oh my God, how can we keep making more and more and more with quality, but also with commerce?
Yeah, you have to isolate yourself a little bit from all of the hype around those movies. You have to, they're also physically draining. I mean, you know, look at us.
I mean, Jesus Christ. But listener, they look beautiful.
One's in a basement and one's in a beautiful office.
That's right. That's what happens. We don't split the money. Guess who gets it?
Yeah, that must get complicated.
No, well, okay, so that. Hang on a second. I want to get more into the Marvel stuff and how you guys got there, but I kind of want to go even further back to how we came into your world, Jason and I did.
But even before that, like, what about, like, were you guys never struck me as, like, comic book, like, guys, were you?
Guys made that film, your first film you guys came out of Cleveland.
We did. We made a movie called Pieces that went to the Slam Dance Film Festival in 97. And this was a credit card movie. So in the, you know, late 80s, Soderbergh made a film called Sex, Lies, and Videotape that ignited this, you know, hey, you can make a movie for 10 grand on credit cards and get discovered out of anywhere and become a major filmmaker. And
you've got to start. You've got to pay that one off. You got to stop accruing all that expensive interest.
We were. That's what Arrested Development was about.
Right. It took 10 years to pay that off.
Is that true?
It's true. Yeah.
Did it really? Wow.
Yeah.
It was a while.
All right. So then Soderbergh sees Pieces.
That's right.
And
then he picks up the phone. He gives us a call a week later. I mean, again, two guys from Cleveland, no connection to the film business whatsoever. Very strange movie. Only a guy like Steven Soderbergh would love this film. And he calls us and says, look, I'd love to help you get your next movie made. And then he started a production company with George Clooney. This is the fast version of it.
Yeah.
And he and Clooney produced another movie for us called Welcome to Collinwood that absolutely crushed it at the box office.
Sam Rockwell. Sam Rockwell.
That's right. Yeah. Sam Rockwell. It's an incredible cast. But
great movie. I love that movie.
Spent about $8 million on that film and it made about $300,000.
Yeah. But the quality was good enough to then go on to?
Well, we were very lucky. Yeah. We were so lucky because we actually got hired before that movie came out, and bombed to direct.
That's the key.
To direct a pilot at FX called Lucky. So this was right the year after The Shield premiered. And FX wanted to do the same thing with comedy that they had done with The Shield, like make something very dark and risible. And
Kevin Reilly.
That's right. Kevin Reilly running FX at the time.
Yeah, so we made this kind of really weird, dark comedy called Lucky that didn't actually work as a series, but the pilot was like an industry favorite. Like everybody watched that pilot. It made its rounds everywhere. We got more meetings off of that pilot than I think anything we've done. And that ended up getting us into Imagine to talk to David Nevins about Arrested.
So it was Nevins who was the first guy that you met on Arrested.
That's right.
On part of the Arrested world. And then he says, what, hey, why don't you guys have lunch with Mitch Hurwitz type thing?
Exactly.
Yeah, I think we sat with Nevins, right, and he said, look, we have this show. It's kind of crazy, but it's going to take some hustling because there's about 35 location changes. We got to shoot it in a compressed time frame. You know, we're trying to get budgets down because we're worried that, you know, single camera comedy may be short-lived because the budgets are getting too high on these things. So we got to compete a little bit.
And it was pitched to you as a pretty pure mockumentary, correct? Weren't there even testimonials a la...
It got pushed more mockumentary, Anth. I mean, right? Like, it was more at the time, I think it was...
By memory, it wasn't a mockumentary at all. Yeah, no, it was just a straight family drama that we ended up... Here's the framing.
That's why you didn't cast Sean.
Right. Sean's too funny.
It's kind of a complex framing. So also what Nevin said to us at the time, and this he said, look, Ron Howard thinks that the half-hour comedy on television is in trouble. He thinks the sort of the sitcom, the stage sitcom is getting stale. He thinks the half-hour single-camera comedy has become unaffordable because you get half the ad revenues for a half-hour comedy that you do for an hour-long drama, but it doesn't cost half the price to produce a half-hour of single-camera filmed entertainment than it does to take an hour. So they're like, we're trying to figure this out. So what we want to do is we're reaching out to indie filmmakers like you because they knew we were kind of guerrilla-style filmmakers.
And cheap.
To try to react cheap. We're cheap.
Really
but also
cheap.
We know how to shoot cheaply.
Yeah.
So they're like, we're trying to come up with a new model for a single camera that will be cheap to produce. And that's when Joe and I, after seeing the script and seeing the level of absurdism that is inherent in Mitch's voice, we thought, well, wouldn't this be funny if he tried to like shoot this in the most real way possible?
Sort of like news gathering, right? Handheld, no marks, no lights, just gathering it.
Exactly.
And now, a word from our sponsor. We get support from Canva. When your work, presentations, and docs look good, you look good. And you can design stunning work presentations, docs, whiteboards, and videos with Canva. Canva is an easy-to-use online design platform. It helps people design compelling visual content and is great for designing any type of presentation and great for any teammate. So our team at Smartless is using Canva when they're coming up with different design concepts for various things related to Smartless and Smartless Media, because we have a lot of stuff going on. It's a busy crew, okay? And if it wasn't for Canva, they'd all be fired. Supercharge your work with AI-powered Canva presentations, docs, videos, and more. In just a few seconds, you can generate slides and text from a prompt. AI is built into Canva right where you work, so you can stay on task without any app switching. It's AI that's easy to learn and even easier to use. Whether you work in sales, marketing, HR, ops, and more, Canva is perfect for any work task. Sales decks, hiring docs, marketing brainstorms, employee videos, you name it. Anyone at work can design with Canva. Start designing today at canva.com. Designed for work. We get support from Happy Egg. I love starting my morning off with farm fresh eggs full of flavor. At Happy Egg, all of their hens roam on 8 or more acres of land, leaving no mystery to why their eggs are the best. These hens are raised on 8+ acres. I got to keep it down because if my hens find out, they don't have 8+ acres. My hens only have like 3/4 of an acre. And they're going to go on strike. Anyway, all of their hens are cared for by small family farmers and live their best hen lives day in and day out. All of this results in eggs with plump orange yolks that are full of flavor. I just, as I mentioned, I like to kick off my morning with farm fresh eggs. The difference is so glaring between an egg from Happy Egg and an egg that just came from clearly some kind of like sad factory. And you just have to taste it for yourself. If you're a fan of eggs, which I am, do yourself this favor and try Happy Egg eggs. You will not be disappointed. You will notice the difference immediately. Get with the Happy Eggs. They're so good. Next time you're at the store, look for the yellow carton. Choose Happy with Happy Egg. Visit happyegg.com/smartless to find a store near you. And if you come by the house, don't mention it to my aunts. Thank you to one of our new sponsors, My Mochi Ice Cream, for supporting the show. I just discovered cookies and cream, My Mochi Ice Cream, and I'm a little obsessed, but I'm a lot obsessed. Do you not know what My Mochi Ice Cream is? Picture this. It's a perfect little scoop of rich, creamy, premium ice cream wrapped in the softest, sweetest dough known to mankind. My Mochi Ice Cream is sweet. It's chewy. It's cool. It's creamy all at the same time. It comes in tons of fabulous flavors like strawberry, mango, cookies and cream, and double chocolate. That cookies and cream, I've always been a cookies and cream fan, but then when I had the My Mochi, oh my gosh, I mean, I was like, my mouthy loved it. First of all, an absolute knockout. Each box of My Mochi ice cream has 6 perfectly portioned mochis that are gluten-free and about 90 calories each. You can find My Mochi at Target, or go to mymochi.com to find your nearest grocery store. Discover the cool, creamy, joyfully chill sensation of My Mochi ice cream today.
All right, back to the show.
2 things. So one is also the guy you brought with you from Lucky was your DP, was Jim, right?
That's right, Jim Hawkinson.
And Jim Hawkinson, who's just an absolute cowboy, who we worked with on a bunch on our other stuff too, and Running Wild and et cetera. And Jim came in, and you guys, the three of you guys, had worked together and already had that, you already had that shorthand when it came to shooting really quickly, lighting really quickly, and just getting, you know, right? Using a lot of existing light if you had
Lucky
to.
Was the same thing, right? It was a very aggressive handheld show shot with shot on the streets of Vegas. So we couldn't light things. I mean, you know, not a big budget. It was FX, early phase of FX. And so we had this, we had developed this run and gun style. And and I remember, you know, the Dogma was big at the time. They were making the Dogma films, if you remember that, where, you know, actors were getting letters that said, don't expect a trailer, do your own makeup. You know, this is a no-frills production. And we may have even sent that out with the script at one point.
That's
time,
how
right?
I got the script to Arrested Development. Yeah. In fact, it was reading that cover sheet that convinced me that there's no way they're going to let me be a part of this cool thing. Because it was declaring, like, we don't want...
Because your makeup budget?
Well, there's that. but yeah, we don't want any of the traditional sort of known... basically hacky, safe TV stuff. And that was my middle name.
No,
was,
hey.
Yeah, no, Will, it's okay.
Jason, how dare you?
Multicam,
don't
sitcom,
you say that. Let me say that.
Now, if we get into the casting of it, we could talk about that because it was true. There was a stigma against Bateman at the time.
Yeah.
And I remember we kept bringing you in with other actors to keep putting you in front of the studio. And there was this conversation constantly because Anthony and I were like, the guy's fucking perfect. Why can't we cast him? And they go, he's just a sitcom guy. He's been in a lot of pilots that haven't gone to air. He's cursed a little bit. I don't know that this is the...
We would hear this and just have these blank stares on our faces. Like, this is the stupidest thing we've ever heard.
That and you had no idea who I was. It's like, well, yeah, what do you mean?
Oh, no. We watched you.
Well, Clooney... Well, you had just... And Clooney had somewhat of a long career, let's say, in the pilot world.
Yeah, 11 pilots or something like that.
And things were working out for him.
George had the same stigma, though, right? Where he had, like, a bunch of failed pilots before VR.
Right. No, I remember feeling incredibly lucky that I got that. I mean, I wasn't sure how many people were going to watch the show, but I knew that it represented a complete opposite for the stuff that I had been doing in the hopes of kind of creating a reset.
You were the anchor of it, Bateman. I mean, like, the show doesn't work because everyone is so insane on the show. It didn't work without a conduit for the audience, somebody that the audience could come in through. Yeah. And what you don't want typically with a comedy is when you have a straight man and everyone else is insane. Mm-hmm. It's very hard for the straight man to get laughs. It's the opposite was true with you, and that's what we kept saying is, you know, this character is going to be flat. And there were other actors that were trying to push on us that were, you know, very straight, and it had a generic feel to it.
Wait, yeah. I've never heard these names. Are you drunk enough to start sharing some of these names? Should we wait? Just go get a beer.
It's a Sunday morning right now.
If you're just joining us, thanks for listening to the Arrested Development Rewatch podcast. Listen, I have a question for you, me, and Dupree. You and me, Dupree.
Hang on.
I want to talk about Captain America, the Winter Soldier.
Comic dork. We're going to get there.
Hang on there. We have spent the last 8 episodes talking about Dorkville and Star Wars.
And Tabasco Theater and shit.
Shut the fuck up for 1 minute. Let us have one moment to talk to the Russo brothers. By the way, Jason. Sorry, go ahead, Ant. Go ahead.
No, I just want to say, you're listening to your other shows that you've done with the Arrested Development people. I always feel horrible for Sean, and I like coming into this. I was like, oh my god, are we really going to do this to Sean again?
It is kind of like a cult.
I love it.
He's still fighting digestion on his lunch. He's
fried
busy.
Chicken sandwich.
Yeah.
So Jason comes in. You guys are stoked. He's the perfect, I've always said, the perfect blank canvas, right? Like every artist is like a blank.
Give him line readings. He does whatever you tell him to do.
Yeah, just a blank canvas. Just the whitest canvas for the other colors to really pop. But he comes in and then he comes in and he reads, and then you guys are like, yeah, you feel vindicated. He's great. And then you start building the pieces around and you start trying to find all those other actors. And it just, it must have been like my question is, did it go the way you thought it would, or did it all happen like in this kind of surprising way? Like, oh, fuck this person. And
super surprising. I mean, you were probably the biggest surprise, but if we go through.
Yeah, because that was the hardest part to cast, wasn't it, Joe?
It was by far the hardest part. And well, we had an incorrect take on Job, I think. Remember that, Amps? Yeah. For a while, we were playing him like the pull my finger uncle, this weirdo that was, you know, living up in the attic. And so we were bringing in a lot older actors, and it just kept going creepy, you know?
Uh-huh. You could have just called him Fartnet. Pull my finger, Fart.
Then we got Arnett, and it got even creepier. And we went, that's it.
We were like, perfect.
This is it.
Lean into it.
Exactly. Oh, but God. I think Michael Cera was first, if I remember correctly.
As you guys know, the whole casting process on that show was difficult. The network never really loved the show.
No. Mm-hmm.
Even, you know, as we all know, when it hit the air, but even back then, it was like...
Even after winning an Emmy, they were like, oh, fuck, we can't cancel it now.
No, they sent us an ice cream truck, remember? Not truck. An ice cream cart.
Cone.
and a banner cart over the guard gate at 20th.
Banner that was blocked by the main 20th sign. So you couldn't see it unless, when you drove, you could see it through your sunroof.
Yeah.
If you were right underneath it. And then I go and they go like, hey guys, we won the Emmy yesterday for best comedy. Here's an ice cream cart.
Yeah, with a bell.
Not even powered. Somebody
unmanned.
Had to push it.
It was unmanned. That's right. Yeah. You had to get your own ice cream out.
Sean, by the way, your own Sean, sprinkles not on an it. Exaggeration.
Yeah. Yeah. It's so funny.
God bless.
And there were 10 bars in it.
God bless him. Having never met you guys, you know, there's not a lot of directing duos, writing duos, producing duos, let alone as successful as you guys are. I'm not knowing you guys, I want to ask the obvious questions, like, how did you guys Did you both, when you were kids, have this secret about loving the business and you didn't let each other know? Like, at what point were you like, hey, I want to do that too. Hey, we should do it
two
together.
Two kids from Cleveland.
That's right.
Yeah.
Couple of Indians fans.
Yeah, we grew up on the east side of Cleveland, and Anth was getting a law degree was this 94? And I was getting an MFA in acting. We were both at the same school, Case Western, in Cleveland. We both came back to our hometown to go to school. And he was really frustrated with law school. And I felt like I didn't ultimately want to be an actor. And we started thinking about directing. We did some black box stuff and started working on some comedy sketch stuff together. And then we decided to write a movie. Robert Rodriguez had written a book about making El Mariachi for $7,000. And again, this contributed to that craze that was going on at the time. Mm-hmm. And so we decided to make a film, and we wrote a script called Pieces. It was a very dark comedy.
Right.
Are you telling your family this? Are you telling your mom and dad? Like, hey, we're writing a movie. And they're like, yeah, good for you guys. Like, what's going on?
Ants should tell that story. That's a good
But you never, I would love that, but you never did it as kids? It wasn't until you were older in college that you had
this? No. We weren't Spielberg in the backyard with a camera, right?
Okay,
we were more cinephiles. We were just guys who went to watch a lot of movies. We loved going to movies. We had a lot of friends that would go, and we'd all quote films. I mean, just sort of the traditional high school experience of, watching movies, talking about them, doing lines all day long, making each other laugh.
So early lines. Coke addiction. Is that
right? Yeah. That's right.
Wait, how did that go down?
Oh, so eventually, as we started to like get more and more serious about it, I eventually did tell my parents that I was living in their house at the time, that I was going to leave film school to like go all in on the filmmaking efforts. And I think, my dad didn't speak to me for like 6 months, even though I was living in the same house with him.
No way.
He would kind of grunt as we would pass each other at the refrigerator or something. But But anyway, eventually he became a very big supporter.
He was convinced we were going to be broke artists. I remember it actually was the Emmy for Arrested Development that when he finally went, okay, fine, you guys can do this.
That's hysterical.
You've already been doing it for years.
Yeah, I think he's the one that sent the ice cream cart. Right.
So you guys do you do Arrested, you guys direct the pilot, and you direct most, I would say, the bulk of the episodes of the first two seasons. Nobody directed more episodes than you guys. Some of the great, some of our favorite episodes, obviously, with you guys. And Jason and I talk about this too. All of us, and you guys are part of it. You guys and me and Jason and the cast and Mitch and everybody, we made those first.
Not Sean.
No. Those first like 8 episodes completely in a vacuum. We had no idea if people were going to like them or think that they were shit. And so we were kind of like this real tight group of us just doing it with no feedback. And it's like, and we're taking big swings and thought like, fuck, we could, I remember driving home some days after shooting going like, this might be the worst thing ever or the
riding that segue around, copping attitude.
No idea. Yeah. I might get ridiculed for this or, you know what I mean?
I had no further to fall. I was like, I was fine. I'm comfortably on the bottom.
But then we have a lot of fun doing it. And then you guys, and then the show ends and you guys end up sort of moving on and doing a bunch of other stuff. What was the first, when you kind of started to break out of the Arrested world, what were you guys thinking? Okay, now we want to do X or Y. What was the plan?
Well, I think really what was going on then, we had struggled so long to sort of make a life as like indie filmmakers and then kind of segue into television, that once Arrested had that success, once we won the Emmy, it was all of a sudden we had work coming at us for the first time in our lives. Like everything prior to that point was just like us pushing the boulder up the hill.
Right.
Like trying not to listen to people tell us no.
Now it's chasing you.
Of a sudden it was coming at us. So we welcomed that. And we had a run in television there that ended up turning into shows like Community and Happy Endings and a few other shows. What our process would be was basically what we did on Arrested, where we would come in, we would direct a pilot because, again, we had sort of patterned ourselves as sort of indie feature makers. So we would approach a pilot like it was a feature, sort of execute it like that. And then we would stay on with the show for, just like with Arrested, for a season or two and do some episodes and then kind of like
pass it on.
Normally the show would be canceled by that point, but but that became our process.
Right. Uh-huh. And then what was the first big film after your television run there?
Captain America.
It was. In between, we did You, Me, and Dupree.
Oh, You, Me, and Dupree.
Right. Yes.
Which, by the way, I also did the table read of. Remember that?
That's right. Mm-hmm.
I played, right. I think, was Michael Douglas the in that?
Yeah, I did.
I read his part at the table, right? You guys are
like, that's hysterical.
That is very cool.
It's a long and storied history, Mr. Arnett.
It's crazy, right?
Yeah.
I remember Downey calling me about you guys saying, so what do you think about the... I remember getting that call going, holy shit, the Russos are going to do a fucking Marvel movie?
Yeah.
I remember thinking that quietly to myself because I didn't want to say it outwardly to
Jim. Downey.
Yeah. But I didn't want him to hear the surprise in my voice or envy. But I just immediately went into like... I got so excited thinking about you guys combining with his humor and his sensibility and his comfort on set and you guys just the way you just move around through the set. I just thought I couldn't say enough about what a great match that would be. I mean, I'm not taking any claim for him signing off.
I just remember being completely surprised
that he was calling about
this
that.
This is a great clickable story for the internet.
Super clickable.
Jason Bateman is responsible.
Yeah, yeah.
Wow.
I'm happy to repeat that.
But here, I'll tell you something. The other side of that coin, I mean, there's a lot of truth in that because, you know, the first Captain America movie we did, Winter Soldier, Downey wasn't in it.
Amazing.
Then we went back with our partners, Marcus and McFeely, who wrote all the Marvel work that we did. And we conceived the next Captain America movie, Civil War.
Yeah, amazing.
You know, Downey was never supposed to be in that movie. He wasn't contracted to be in that movie. But we had designed a story where it was built as a two-hander between Captain America and Downey's character, Iron Man. So we finally got the approval from Marvel. Kevin Feige said, okay, let's do this. He got the approval from Marvel Publishing in New York. We're going to do it. And he said, okay, now you guys got to go get Downey. He like just tossed it to us.
That's an easy fish to boat.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, listen, Robert, we want you. I know you've revitalized your career playing a superhero. We want you to be the villain in this next one. That was literally the pitch to him, is we had to go sit there and explain to him, you know, how his character wasn't going to be exclusively a villain in it. So it's a big swing for him because, you know, here are the guys coming off of Captain America doing it. You know, this is going to be our second movie with Evans. He's coming into Evans's franchise. I mean, it was a big swing.
Yeah.
And I'm stunned. I'm still stunned he said yes.
Mm-hmm.
Well, but he loves taking chances, as you know, and he's such a I would have loved to be in that meeting of you guys convincing him, and I can imagine the questions that Downey asked you guys, because he's so thoughtful, and he's thinking from so many different steps ahead, always in sideways, like in every direction, right?
I just want to see his outfit. I want to know what he was wearing.
He had us out to the house. He might have been in shorts and a t-shirt, Anthony. Remember, he's kind of laying on a chaise lounge thing. And, Anthony and I are sitting across from him, leaning forward, you know, excitedly pitching. And then this happens.
Sweating.
Right.
And then he almost kills you.
And then Downey will be wearing like a see-through Fendi raincoat.
Right, and green
socks. He literally came to a barbecue, a cookout on the beach once, and he was wearing a see-through Fendi raincoat and like a fucking yellow t-shirt. And I go, what the fuck are you wearing, man?
A see-through raincoat.
But nobody can pull it off like Downey. By the way, he made it look cool. And like, if I wore it, I'd look like the worst tool of all time.
He's a walking piece of art.
He is a fucking piece of art.
Guys, I have two questions. I have two questions about Endgame really quick.
Yeah.
One is, I'm sure you've seen the reactions on TikTok and everything. I think the crowd reaction videos on about Endgame. It must have been like so satisfying and thrilling. And like, that was just huge. That's the first
question.
And then the second thing is, how in the world, one of the most now iconic shots in all of cinema history is all of those superheroes in one shot when Iron Man dies... And they're all lined up, and the camera goes through every single one of them. And what'd you say?
Nothing.
What did he say?
Said, I guess I don't need to see that now.
Well, it's 18 years old.
No, I saw it.
But no, so the camera
Sean,
goes...
have you still managed to scrape the jizz off your TV from that?
No, it makes everybody look beautiful.
For you. Yep.
And so, anyway, so it goes through, and the camera goes through, and every single superhero ever, like in every single movie, as somebody in the business watching, I'm like, how did you organize everybody's schedule to shoot all, like, so many schedules to figure out.
We start with number two first. Yeah. That took a year. That took a year of planning.
Just that shot?
Yeah. And we referred to it as the wedding. I mean, it took us a year to plan how to get all those people together. And then we had a couple of months to plan out that shot.
Wow.
But I remember the day that we sent a drone up just to get footage of base camp that day. I've never seen anything like it. You know,
everybody said it was the largest base camp they'd ever seen in their 40 or 50.
It went on for miles. I mean, it was insane.
In excess of 50 trucks.
Oh, yeah.
And it was the deal points Olympics, I bet.
Oh, yeah. For sure.
Not a cheap scene.
Portal to portal meeting trailer requirements, meeting food and budget, right? Just workout trailer, everything.
Oh, my God.
But we rehearsed that shot, Sean. We did. We scouted that location multiple times. We got, we brought stand-ins. We rehearsed the entire shot over and over.
Yeah.
So that we refined it because it was
amazing.
So,
I mean, name an actor and they were in that shot. It was crazy.
It was a lot of pressure.
It was. And I remember, that day we were able to shoot that on a ranch down outside of Atlanta. So we had control of the property. There was no paparazzi around, right? It was several hundred acres. So it was, very clandestine. And to get on the set that day was the most, intense security. You had to be at the highest level, sort of the inner
circle. I'm sure. And how long did it take to actually film the scene?
I think it took us about 2 hours. I probably did that shot like 8 or 9 times. You're only getting people to stand around for so long because, they're not really doing anything.
They got to get back to the cable machine.
Right. And it was so impressive.
Blast backs and buys. Yeah. Well, it interrupts a lot of workouts. Yeah.
But those fan reaction videos too, Sean, that you brought up, we've watched those things so much. I mean, they are some of the most satisfying things we've ever seen.
Amazing.
I mean, to see a movie theater, to a crowd to react like that in a movie theater that's not a live show.
Yeah.
It just was extremely rare. And it's for people who just like love that experience in the theater, it's just was priceless.
Yeah. And my guy, growing up for me, it was like, Star Wars, because I'm not, Star Wars was the thing. But one of my godsons, Sammy, he was like crying his eyes out when Iron Man died. Mm. And I was, and he called me. He's like, I'm like, what's the matter? He's like, Iron Man is dead. I'm like, it was such a huge deal for this massive generation of these fans in a way that Star Wars, it was just so cool to see.
Sounds like
new
Sammy
fan.
Needs to get a life, to be honest.
Yeah. No, Sam might want to take a step outside.
Let's put it in perspective. You know what I mean, Sammy? I mean,
sunshine
it sounds
outside.
Like there's some bad parenting or something. But let me ask you, guys, JK, we love Sammy. What about your own kids and their reactions to you guys being part of something that is such a huge part of, I'm sure they're friends and everybody loves the movies and they do too. And can they appreciate it in the way knowing that, that you guys made these movies?
It's a really complex question.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's like, the same movies that took us away for 2 years.
Yeah. Right.
But they're my kids are not big comic book fans. So it was interesting. It's grounding because you come home and they could give a shit, which is great, I think. But I do think that, for Anth and I, and you said this earlier, Bateman, we were huge comic book fans and nobody knew this, but I have I have like 5 boxes in an attic still filled with, 50-year-old comic books. Wow. So this was a dream come true for us. And what you were talking about, Sean, is watching these reactions in the theaters. That's who we were as kids, right?
That's
I watched
what I'm
Empire
right.
Strikes Back
yeah.
like 5 times in a row in one day,
yeah.
sitting in the front row by myself,
exactly.
Crying at the end every time.
That was me masturbating behind you.
Check out this lightsaber.
Uh-huh. And put it this way, Joe, he wasn't watching the movie, all right?
But to be able to give that to, you want to recreate that experience. That's what we wanted. That's what we love about film. So if there's a line you could draw from who we were as kids to these movies.
Right.
And that's like falling out of his booth right now.
He
cracks himself up all the time.
He does. We'll
turn him down in the mix and you just keep talking. And we will be right back.
Hey, SmartLess listener, we get support from Viator. You know, Scotty and I took a vacation many years ago. We geeked out because we liked the movie Amadeus, and we went to Austria, and it was fantastic. We went to all Mozart's kind of hangout places, and I know, total nerdville, but it was pretty cool, and I absolutely loved it. It will always be one of our favorite memories of vacationing, so maybe one of the most perfect experiences we've ever had traveling. And so next time you're looking to plan the perfect trip like that, an experience, check out Viator. Viator is a tool you can use to plan and book travel experiences around the world. Their app and website make it easy to explore 300,000 plus travel experiences so you can discover what's out there no matter where you are traveling or what you are interested in. Feel better about your travel decisions by checking out real traveler reviews to get the inside scoop from others who have already checked out the experiences. Viator offers 24/7 customer service so you know you'll get support at any hour if things aren't going as planned. Plus, free cancellation to help you plan for the unexpected. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find the perfect travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator. From visionary filmmaker Luca Guadagnino comes Challenger, starring Zendaya, Josh O'Connor, and Mike Feist. Zendaya stars as Tashi Duncan, a former tennis prodigy turned coach who has taken her husband Art and transformed him into a world-famous Grand Slam champion. To jolt him out of his recent losing streak, she makes him play a challenger event close to the lowest level of the pro tournament. Her strategy takes a turn when he finds himself standing across the net from his former best friend and Tashi's former boyfriend, Patrick. Past and present collide and tensions run high. Tashi must ask herself, what will it cost to win? See Challengers only in theaters April 26th. Get tickets now at ChallengersMovie.com.
My dad works in B2B marketing, but I never really knew what that meant. Then one day, my dad came by my school for career day and told everyone in my class he was a big ROAS man. Then he just kept saying things like, the bigger the ROAS, the better, over and over. My friends still laugh at me to this day. I think it means calculating a return on ad spend. One thing's for sure. I'll be known as the ROAS man's kid for the rest of my days. Why couldn't you just be a fireman or a lawyer? Why? You ruined my life, Dad.
Not everyone gets B2B, but LinkedIn has the people who do. And with ads on LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people based on job title, industry, likelihood to buy, and more. Start converting your B2B audience into high-quality leads today. We'll even give you a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/smartlist to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/smartless. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be. To be.
It's all a lighthearted nightmare on our podcast, Morbid.
We're your hosts. I'm Alina Urquhart.
And I'm Ash Kelly.
And our show is part true crime, part spooky, and part comedy.
The stories we cover are well-researched.
He claimed and confessed to officially killing up to 28 people.
With a touch of humor.
I just like to go ahead and say that if there's no band called Malevolent Deity,
that is pretty great.
A dash of sarcasm and just garnished a bit with a little bit of cursing.
This motherfucker lied.
Like a liar.
Like a liar.
And if you're a weirdo like us and love to cozy up to a creepy tale of the paranormal,
or you love to hop in the Wayback Machine and dissect the details of some of history's most notorious crimes,
you should tune in to our podcast, Morbid. Follow Morbid on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen to episodes early and ad-free by joining Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.
And now, back to the show.
Did you guys get any advice when you were first starting out as directors, doing films at a tiny scale that you're still using today on stuff that you're doing at a massive scale? Are you or have you changed so much as directors, had to adapt so much as directors, that everything you learned at the beginning is not really applicable now? Or is there some evergreen
stuff? Don't work with Jason Bateman was number
yeah.
one.
Aside from that one, yeah. Aside from that lesson learned.
The short answer I think for us is like, because we've done so many different things, like we've made movies for as little money as you could possibly make a movie for, and we've made movies for as much money as you can make a movie for. You know, we've done TV, comedy, drama, you know, network, cable, streaming. We do shoot commercials. So it's like for us, you know, because we like working in all these different forms, it's kind of all the same for us. Like we have the same process no matter what we're doing. We just sort of dream up what something that's exciting to us and then figure out how to execute it. So it's kind of just that process repeated over and over again. So I think, and we love technology. We've always loved the way that technology allows you to create certain feelings or effects or just
how do
textures.
You stay up on that? Because I'm sure that, you know, if you can imagine it, you can do it nowadays. But how do you know that for sure? How do you stay up on where technology is so that you know whether what you're thinking of is actually manageable?
It's hard because you have to use it. So it is really tricky. You have to just figure out ways.
And you have to learn it, too. You have to constantly learn.
Like, the only way to learn it is to use it, yeah.
I mean, filmmaking is a giant collaboration between hundreds of people. So you're relying on, you know, technical experts, technologists that come in and can show you new things that are going on, tell you about, you know, Favreau's a really good friend of ours, and he's, you know, he's done all this incredible work with Star Wars shows using LED screens and really trying to advance the craft to make it more efficient. And I think the important thing is where technology helps you is, you know, the higher the budget goes, the higher the risk, right? And then a studio becomes more risk averse when you're spending more money on a project. If you can get that number down, then they'll take more risks. They'll take risks on, you know, filmmakers with interesting voices, younger filmmakers. I think it's critically important because it has gotten absurdly expensive to tell stories. There has to be a future where that number comes down dramatically.
Yeah. But while you say that, your new project, Citadel, on Amazon, seems to be, the trailer's incredible, by the way. You're doing a show. Tell the audience a little bit about the show. But what's exciting to me is that you're doing multiple versions of the show that kind of cross pollinate each other, like in different territories around the world. Explain that.
I mean, basically, it came from Jen Salke came to us, who runs Amazon, and said, look, I have this idea. It's basically a business model, which is I want to do a U.S. mothership show that somehow connects to various local language shows around the globe in some manner. There's interplay between the mothership English language show and the local language shows. And she's like, can you guys come up with anything? We love the idea because we love the global audience. That was one thing that the Marvel experience really turned us on to. I mean, we were globally minded all of our lives since we were like early film fans. But, you know, the idea that we live in a world now where you can reach people in every corner of the globe with a story that they can enjoy together at the same time and communicate together. I mean, it's just it's a very powerful thing. So we thought, okay, this is a new frontier. This is new technology. Amazon now exists and their business model says, oh, we can make shows in different languages in different places around the world, and they can talk to one another.
Wow. And cast members kind of cross-pollinate as well?
That's right. They can. Yeah, exactly. They can cross-pollinate. Also, you're creating
Stop saying pollinate. There's something so gross. You really hung up on that.
I can't wait to see it.
Well, and this is a show we produce. This is something that our company, Agbo, you know, Joe and I have been able to, since we moved on from the Marvel, we formed a company with our partners, Chris Marcus and Steve McFeely, who are writing partners.
What's Agbo mean? Real quick. AGBO.
Nothing. Absolutely nothing.
Nothing. It's nonsense.
That's Pick a it lie. Out of a phone book. Yeah.
Again, go get
name.
That beer, Joe. I want it. The answer.
Yeah.
That's fucking dope. That's so dope.
No, here the shortest answer to that is when we were first writing together and we started doing some sketch comedy, we tried to drum up publicity for it. So we wrote an article for the school newspaper that was a phony review of the show. And the reviewer just lacerates the show. And everything he hates about the show is everything we love about the show. And we needed a name for this article. We looked in the Cleveland phone book and found some guy named Gozy Agbo. And that was it.
That's hysterical.
Wow. Yeah. All right.
So have you guys ever wanted to dive, by the way, sorry to back up for a second. Have you guys ever wanted to dive into the Star Wars world? Is there plans to do something?
I thought you were
going
to say want to dive into theater. I really wanted you to say dive into theater, specifically musical theater. Oh, it's coming. I know it's coming.
Yes.
It's a follow up.
Well, that will be a follow up.
We love Star Wars. I mean, this is, you know, the same way that.
You're not going to say anything that you've had meetings on that you're talking about because you can't talk about it.
Guarantee he'd had meetings.
No, there were early conversations. There were early conversations with us. And, you know, Kevin Feige is a huge Star Wars fan. And there were some early conversations about maybe teaming up with Kevin to do Star Wars.
Speaking to take from Jason, there's been a lot of cross-pollination.
Yep.
Between, now he's awake, between Star Wars and Marvel, a lot of the same. Because it does have a sort of a similar, similar sensibility, right, between those two worlds. So it makes sense that there have been people who have done both. And I bet you, if I'm Kathy Kennedy, I'm like, I'm calling the Russo brothers because I want them to get in here too.
Yeah. Couldn't make their deal. Guaranteed. It's too expensive, Will.
Not now.
These guys are running the world.
But let me ask you this. So
you're
guys
a fan,
go,
but if something happens, it's great.
They're fans. They're on the record as saying they're fans.
Yes, we're huge fans.
And by the way, and the ball's in their court.
Yeah.
So you guys, I mean, by them, I mean Star Wars. So you guys, you do all this Marvel stuff, and then you go off and you make a bunch of big movies. You guys made some movies with...
Gray Man. Awesome. Gray
made Gosling and Evans. Yep. Yeah, Gray Man.
Yeah. All those guys.
Cherry with Tom Holland. Yep. Yeah.
When you go and you do those movies after coming out of that world, do they just seem so much easier? Because, like, you do, like Sean was saying, for Endgame, you plan a shot for a year and you fucking, and you do all this stuff and there's so much into it. Now when you make just a regular old sort of action comedy or whatever, you're like, it's pretty easy.
It's something you're starting. I mean, Joe, you wrote Gray Man, right?
That's right. Yeah, we started. I mean, look, the transition for us after Marvel was more towards artist ownership. You know, we wanted to start our own company. We wanted to start, you know, controlling, creating our own content as much as possible. We went out and raised money, you know, the studios, well-financed.
Kind of like what Ben and Matt are doing.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I mean, it's sort of a, you know, for us, I mean, I think, you know, it's a very disruptive time in the business. And to have a place where you can be protected, right? And you can protect yourself, and you can work on what you want to work on and at the pace that you want to work on.
Hire yourself.
Basically, exactly. And, you know, so that was the focus for us.
Look
really
for yourself.
Why
be a fan of your own work. Be a fan of your own work.
Hire yourself.
That's what Sean was mumbling behind you, Joe, in the movie theater.
Hire yourself.
Be a fan of yourself.
Hire yourself.
Just
hire
be a fan of yourself.
do you guys, how much time do you guys spend? I know you keep saying, talking about pollinate. When you guys came out, you were young filmmakers and you were recognized or you were sort of discovered, if you will, by Steven Soderbergh. But how much time do you guys spend looking for those new young talents and young voices? Because there are a lot of people out there who are trying to make or are making films and putting them online, et cetera, et cetera.
Like what Soderbergh did for you guys.
Yeah. Do you guys spend a lot of time doing that stuff, looking for emerging talent?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's a big part of our agenda at AGBO. Because we're able to, you know, the company is built in a way. It's a well-funded company. It makes large projects. We have the capacity in the space. And Joe and I also look at it as like it's a karmic debt that we owe the universe to like find people who are interesting artists who have important stories to tell and figure out how we realize those movies, because some of those stories aren't going to get through the system any other way.
Right.
You know, like we wouldn't have gotten through the system any other way. So that's really important to us. And in fact, I mean, look, Everything Everywhere All at Once is
congratulations, by the way.
Thank you.
I wanted to get to that.
No, it was such a great night for all you guys.
Yeah.
That's unbelievable. Yeah. What
I mean,
a film.
Massive.
They're incredibly talented. And that's sort of part of the, I mean, these are guys that made a movie with a farting corpse, you know, they're risk takers. They're very inventive.
Swiss Army Man. You guys ever see Swiss Army
Sean
Man?
Had three callbacks for that.
Yeah. But that's a good, I mean, there's a good
but
example.
Just because his resume's always said can fart on cue. And
special skills.
Try it. Yeah. Count me down. I'll do it.
Juggles. Now, can you tell us at all what, maybe not specifically, but in the world of what might be next that we can be all looking forward to seeing coming out of you guys?
So Citadel comes out very shortly. Extraction 2 is out in June. That's the Hemsworth franchise.
Another little cute little indie you guys do.
That's right. And then Anth and I are working on a project called The Electric State that was starring Chris Pratt and Millie Bobby Brown.
Oh, Chris Pratt, that's a mistake. That's a mistake.
Yeah, you might want to reconsider with Pratt.
Very difficult. Guys, the movie's already shot. It's in the can.
Oh, yeah.
By the way, I ran into Chris the other day, and he said he had the best time making that movie.
We love Pratt. I mean, obviously, look at
he falls a lot, though. Guys, see what I did?
Yeah. Pratfalls?
Pratfall. It took me a minute.
But he's like, you guys know him.
He's the greatest.
He just brought amazing energy every day. He's always looking. He's always searching. He's always sort of surprising you. And he's very smooth with
good
everybody.
Good dude. Happy to be there.
But Ant, you said something right there, which is, and I've always loved Pratt for this, from the day I met him, from the day he did that, we talked about it. We had him on the show, and he did the first season of, he was in Parks and Rec, but I remember the first season, the first time I saw it, he was so surprising, and he always is surprising.
Yeah.
And so the ultimate weapon in comedy is that you never know what the fuck Pratt is going to say or do.
Yeah.
And he catches you off guard, and it's always really fucking funny.
Yeah,
and that's the mark of somebody who's genuinely funny. And a great golfer.
You know, let's prioritize
that. He's decent. Let's not give him too much.
Well, he works too much to be fantastic.
Well, I'm realizing as, we do tend to work with a lot of the same actors. We like family. We like hanging out. We like having fun. You spend a lot of time on set together. Yeah. But I think we've worked with you probably double what we've worked with anyone else on. So I think we've done like six or seven things together.
Yeah, only once with me and nothing with Sean.
It's coming.
Yeah, so I'll double check my email.
I can beat that Everything Everywhere All at Once script, and I have a 310-page script I'd like to send you.
Oh, Jesus.
Right on the money.
Please send it. We'll read it. We'll read it out loud right here.
We'll do a whole podcast around it.
Just workshop it. Yeah. You guys, we love you and thank you for all of this time.
Such a pleasure.
Didn't that go by fast?
Yeah, so fast.
You guys,
thank you guys for doing this.
Yeah, thank you guys.
Thank you. And by the way, it's remarkable what you guys have done with this show. It's like I listen to it all the time. It's true.
We're blown
funny,
away ourselves.
Crazy, surprising. And valuable. So
thank you for even calling it a show, because it's such a haphazard piece of shit. But let me just say this. I'm so genuinely happy for you guys. It couldn't happen to two better, more talented, nicer fucking dudes. Yeah. I love you guys.
I'm a huge, huge fan of you guys.
Yeah. Thank you very much.
You
thank
give
you
this business really a good name, you Russo
thank
brothers.
As do you guys. Thank you.
All right. We love you.
Love you guys.
Have a great rest of the day, and we'll see you soon.
See you guys.
Take care, everybody.
Bye, boys.
Bye, guys.
Ciao. Thank you.
How about those guys? I didn't know they worked that much on Arrested Development.
Oh yeah,
the whole first year, second year,
most of the first two seasons.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
I
mean, there are other people, but yeah.
Yeah.
That's so cool. They're so cool. They're so like chill.
Yeah, like imagine that, Sean. Like for all of the gain that Arrested Development afforded me and Will and everyone else associated with the show. To watch what happened with their career
after
Arrested, can you imagine what Will and I and everyone else was just like, oh my God, there they go. And now they've like, up until last year or something, they're responsible for the highest grossing film in the history of movies.
I
think probably like number one and number two. And now I think it's number two and number three or whatever the hell it is.
Avatar.
They're just responsible for so much health of this business.
I know,
and they're legitimately great dudes. They are such nice guys. They're such regular guys from who really have not changed, I imagine, since the day they moved from Cleveland.
Yeah, and in this short amount of time we spent with them, I can tell that they are very balanced individuals.
Very,
which is rare in this business. They're very just kind of together.
Yeah. And a pleasure to be on set with, man.
Oh my God! Joe would be when we were doing. Remember, you brought up all night when he was coming. He was doing Up All Night, and you go like. He'd be like having a little something to eat, and he was working on his fantasy football, which Jason and I used to do with him at various times. And then he'd be like, you come back in, and they go cut, and I'd walk in, and he's like talking to the thing, he's looking at his thing, and go, Joe, what do you think? He goes, kind of looks up and he's like, yeah, let's just do it again. Maybe just do it a little faster at the top there, and then look at her in the eye, and blah, 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 blah. All right, let's go. And then he's eating.
I need to go back.
All right, I think maybe I can get a trade for this guy. He's just
easygoing
and effortless and just like,
no stress.
And just, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Just it's sweet rare. And on top. Yeah, rare.
And they're brothers, too. I mean, aren't brothers supposed to fight all the time?
I know. That's what I wanted to ask them, but I didn't want to be weird about it. I was like, don't you guys
I've never seen them. I've honestly never seen them fight.
No. Or even get sort of annoyed with one another.
No.
Not like us three.
No. You son of a bitch.
You fucking cunt.
I didn't ask him about it. What about splitting the money? That's got to be a pain. I've always wondered about these directing duos. Do they get twice the directing budget, or do they have to split?
No, it's probably one, and they split it.
But I wonder if that still is the case with them. You know,
they might get like a one plus. Yeah, they're big shots. You get a one plus.
But they're family, so it probably doesn't hurt to split.
Jason, price of bread right now, go.
Ooh, a dollar a slice? Am I close? You're laughing at me like I'm not close.
A loaf of bread is $35.
And maybe 50 cents for the heels?
Oh, I don't know. Gosh.
Or are they selling them all together? Do you get a break if you buy a bunch of slices together?
And, well, only if you buy them together.
Well done, Sean.
Bye.
Stupid.
Smart.
Smartless is 100% organic and artisanally handcrafted by Michael Grant Terry, Rob Armjarve, and Bennett Barbago.
Smartless.
If you like Smartless, you can listen early and ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts. Prime members can listen ad-free on Amazon Music. Before you go, tell us about yourself by filling out a short survey at wondery.com/survey.
Back in the 90s, Pepsi and Coca-Cola were in a heated race to try and win loyal customers by any means necessary. But when Pepsi launched an ambitious promotion that encouraged people to buy Pepsi and redeem points for prizes, they overlooked their own fine print in a major way. I'm Misha Brown, and I'm the host of Wondery's podcast, The Big Flop. Every week, guests join me to chronicle one of the biggest pop culture fails of all time. Like, who at Pepsi thought it would be a good idea to advertise that people could earn enough points to redeem a military jet as a prize? They never imagined somebody might actually try to snag it. But a 23-year-old did, and suddenly, Pepsi owed him a jet. Follow The Big Flop on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen to The Big Flop early and ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus.